Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. On this podcast, we present a session from the EDUCAUSE 2012 annual conference. The presentation is entitled EdX, a breakthrough in online learning. And our speaker is Anne Margulies, Chief Information Officer for Harvard University.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. It's really great to see so much interest in edX. In addition to being the CIO at Harvard, since January, I've been the interim executive director for HarvardX, which is the Harvard portion of our edX partnership. It's really been a behind-the-scenes role, so this is sort of unusual for me to be out front speaking to you about this. I've been taking a very behind-the-scenes role because edX is being led at Harvard and at MIT at the very highest levels of our academic leadership. edX is really being led by our provosts, with very strong support from our presidents, with deep engagement from our deans. So fortunately, and it's being very much driven by key faculty committees who are making the really important decisions about the design and the direction of edX. So very appropriately, our academic leadership are usually the ones who are out talking about edX. I, however, am really delighted to have a chance to talk to all of you because you're my peeps, and I'm hoping that you're going to have a lot of interest in all aspects of edX. The reason I'm in this interim role for edX and HarvardX is really not so much because I'm a CIO, even though there's an important role for CIOs in what we're doing. It's really because I have done time. I have been fortunate to spend time at both MIT and Harvard. So I have some bit of knowledge. I've gotten to know how both Harvard and MIT work. They are extraordinarily different types of universities, which reminds me of a joke. This is an old joke, but I think it still is very much on point. And most of you probably know that MIT and Harvard are both located in Cambridge, Massachusetts. They're both beautiful campuses on the Charles River. Each of these campuses is just 3 miles apart from each other. About halfway between our campuses is a Trader Joe grocery store, which is really popular among all of our students. Like most grocery stores, Trader Joe's has an express line. So that's clearly marked, and the sign says that if you have 15 items or fewer, you can use the express line. So as the story goes, the cashier looked up and saw a student with a whole cart full of stuff. And so the cashier just shook his head and said, "You are either from MIT and you cannot read, or you are from Harvard and you cannot count." Which still to this day I think does exemplify quite a bit, which is different about our cultures. I'm going to get us started this afternoon by taking you back just a little while. I want to take you back just about 6 months. 6 months ago, on May 2nd, MIT and Harvard came together. We actually all came together just about a block away from that Trader Joe's store. Again, we're at a hotel just halfway between MIT and Harvard, and we came together for the announcement of edX.
These very early stages were something so novel, so new, so different, is for many faculty and students at MIT very exciting, at the same time very scary. This is something new, it's different, it's potentially disruptive.
Harvard Harvard and MIT recognize the incredible effect that technology is having on education today.
It's opening new vistas in education for the world, for our campuses.
Online education for students around the world will be the next big thing in education. This is the single biggest change in education since the printing press.
Together, Harvard and MIT will be sharing knowledge more broadly.
We plan to make available courses and educational materials to anyone who has an internet connection.
Technology can strengthen education, both for our on-campus students as well as for those around the world.
Our goal is to educate a billion people around the world.
Online education is not an enemy of residential education, but rather a profoundly liberating and inspiring ally.
So I see technology-enabled education to really democratize learning.
It's really transforming the way that we see material, access material, and interact with the course.
It really tailors the experience personally to whoever's trying to be a part of it, which is huge, I think.
Beginning this fall, an array of courses developed by faculty at both of our institutions will be made available online.
This is not to be construed as MIT Lite or Harvard Lite. The content is the same content.
This will make tremendous resources available to people everywhere. We expect to transform learning in the classroom along with learning online.
edX is, in the very best sense, a work in progress. But it is also an act of progress.
Combining forces from Harvard and MIT, we can do amazing projects that will further enrich how to develop the online learning environment and how to develop the content in the right way for delivery on campus and worldwide.
That video was from the press conference. Again, it was really just 6 months ago, but it was an incredibly exciting moment back in Cambridge. And the word I kept hearing through the crowd that was there was historic. And we really believe that it was a historic time. It's probably a date certainly in Cambridge we'll be remembering for a long time. We also believe that this is an incredible moment in higher education. I'm going to talk very briefly about why Harvard and MIT came together to seize this exciting opportunity. I'll describe what edX is. It really is much more than just a platform. And although it's been much less than a year since we started, we've already learned a great deal. And I also want to talk about why we believe this is an incredible opportunity for us to learn much, much more. And finally, at the end of my very brief talk, I hope you'll agree, as we do, that this really is just the beginning. The reaction to edX, as well as other similar initiatives, has really been over the top. Those of us who are in IT are used to a lot of exaggeration. We're used to a lot of hype. We're used to really decades of people talking about how technology is going to transform education when really it hasn't. But a lot of the hype now seems different to us. The hype has come from really all corners. The MOOC mania that seems to have caught everyone's attention is important, but we really at edX don't call ourselves a MOOC. We really don't want to be labeled as a MOOC. We see this as something much bigger. This is truly a grand experiment about the future of education. We believe this is a rare occasion, however, that this rhetoric, all of these words that have been used to describe edX, this hype actually does meet reality. We really do think this is a big deal. Why do we think this is a big deal? I mean, many of you have been doing online education for a long time. You've been doing online education incredibly successfully for decades. We believe this is an important time that's different because of a combination of pressures that have been building up on higher education and a combination of opportunities to begin to address some of those pressures. So one of the first pressures that higher education is feeling, of course, is globalization and the increasing need for us to be able to be relevant globally, to be able to solve global problems, and to be able to compete worldwide for our students and our scholars. And of course, there's increasingly intense pressure for us to reduce costs, as well as pressure to meet students' expectations for more open education resources, for more flexible education, and a much more customized educational experience. So at the same time we're all feeling those pressures, our presidents, our boards, our provosts, our deans are all feeling those pressures. We fortunately are seeing new technologies like smart mobile devices, very low-cost video, and interactive social media that's become very, very commonplace. We're also seeing much, much more very high-quality educational content online and accessible. And finally, we're seeing that our students and our faculty are incredibly not just open, but eager to innovate. So these opportunities at this moment in time provide us what we believe is an incredible opportunity to start dealing with these serious pressures in higher education. And that's why Harvard and MIT came together to seize this opportunity and create edX. edX is a nonprofit joint venture owned by Harvard and MIT. Our two institutions have made not only significant financial investments in edX, but we're making significant investments by our faculty who are providing the courses and the content, developing new pedagogies. We're developing new tools and technologies, as well as collecting incredible amounts of data for what we think is going to be groundbreaking research. One way to think about what edX is edX is, we think of it as very much as a startup, and it's our MIT and Harvard's organization to provide the platform and the critical support collecting all that data that's going to be available for research. We think of edX as the entity as really a software development and a services, an incredibly important services organization. MIT and Harvard came together because we share common goals. It really was not a difficult partnership to negotiate because, as our provost said, there was no white space between what MIT wanted to accomplish and what Harvard wants to accomplish. Our three goals are simple. We want to expand access to education, enhance teaching and learning on our campuses as well as beyond, and we want to be able to advance teaching and learning through research. From the very start, we developed between MIT and Harvard a set of principles that has been guiding the development of edX over the last 6 months. We agreed that edX will be nonprofit, It will be inclusive of other universities. It will be open source and financially sustainable. And our real goal, what we aspire to be known for, is to be the leading source of the highest quality online learning worldwide. Quality is what we're after, not volume, not quantity. So edX, I just described it as a service organization, but it really is much more than the website or the platform or the service organization that supports it. edX is MIT and Harvard's commitment to asking fundamental questions about the future of our universities. edX is about harnessing technology and rigorous research to improve teaching and learning. It's not just about putting courses online. It's not about trying to just keep up with what other universities are doing. It's not just about providing a platform for a small number of our most innovative faculty. edX is a major institutional commitment. And it's also very, very clearly about communities. Like education, edX is at its core, is a human endeavor, and communities are already forming at remarkably rapid pace and at many levels with many, many different interests. So there's a community of developers that's forming at edX headquarters. edX headquarters is in Kendall Square. I'm there a couple or a few times a week, and every time I go, it is just palpable how much energy there is, and there are more people and less space. So there's an incredibly exciting community of software developers at our headquarters. But there's also a community of faculty who are forming on each of our campuses and are starting to work together across our campuses. I have to say the response to edX at Harvard's campus has been surprisingly and overwhelmingly positive by our faculty. It's not an exaggeration to say that these days, on at least Harvard's campus, edX has become, and HarvardX, sort of the dominant conversation. And of course, there's a community of learners that are forming right as we speak around the courses that we've launched. edX is also an open source technology, again, with a community that will be forming around it. Anant Agrawal, who's the president of edX, he's a computer science faculty member at MIT. He was also the chair of what's called CSAIL, the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, the largest laboratory at MIT. He is now, however, the full-time president of edX. He has a wonderful metaphor, this Swiss Army knife metaphor for the open source platform. And he describes the new features as blades. So, for example, for the course that he taught during the pilot, one of the blades was a laboratory where a student could design and build and actually test a circuit. And now there are other blades, and a corkscrew is being developed to support some of the courses that we're going to be rolling out in the spring. One of the exciting blades that we're working on for a Harvard Humanities course is actually going to provide a way for students all over the world to be able to manipulate in a three-dimensional way some of the incredible treasures from Harvard's collections. We have several blades developed now in the platform, but we're expecting many, many, many more will be developed through the open source community by developers all over the world. This is what the site looks like. That picture is actually some of the edX staff sitting outside, not today, because I think there's snow on the ground today, But a few months ago, that was taken of the edX staff when we dragged him out there for this photo. But if you haven't been to the site, you really should go and check it out. 9 courses are offered at this point by 3 partners. University of California, Berkeley joined us. And the Harvard courses, the 2 Harvard courses that were launched this fall, are really very, very different. The CS50X course, CS50 is one of Harvard's most popular courses on our campus. We have an amazing faculty member who has been innovative for several years, of course, as a computer scientist, uses technology in very, very effective ways throughout his teaching. So he took his innovations that he developed on campus, and he's now put them online for the world. On the other hand, the public health course, this is a brand new course that was just developed by 2 of our most gifted lecturers at our School of Public Health. Neither of them ever used any technology in their teaching. So they're teaching this brand new course using technology, sort of experimenting online with the world, and then they are going to bring that experience back to our campus. So this is kind of the mooky part of the presentation. I realized it's kind of ironic that I'm lecturing to you about an online learning program, and I think you can learn about the functionality of the platform better by just going to the platform and playing around with it yourself. So I'm just going to flash by kind of the basics. By the way, that's Anant Agarwal. He, as I said, is the current president of edX. He taught the pilot course on circuits and electronics. It was an incredibly successful pilot. I have no idea why he has a chainsaw in a circuits class, but he does seem to have a thing about chainsaws. So, you know, there are discussion boards, incredibly active discussion boards, where unbelievable amount of hints and help are provided from student, you know, by students to other students. This is one of the very, very interactive labs. And, of course, you can earn a certificate on edX. If you register for the course and you complete all the assignments and you pass all the exams, you can get what we call an honor code certificate. And you've probably read about the fact that the pilot course had 151,000 people registered for the course and 7,100 people earned certificates, which sounds like a very low completion rate. But another way to think about it is that it would take MIT nearly 50 years to teach as many students in the traditional way on MIT's campus. It would have taken MIT 50 years to get 7,000 students through their course. And this course is a legit MIT, very heavy lifting, lots of hard work course with significant prerequisites. This is not an introductory course. This is a second year course at MIT. In the spring, we will be experimenting with proctored exams. So we'll be providing not just honor code certificates, but fully proctored certificates. So the edX team is working really, really rapidly on lots of new blades and lots of new things to support some exciting courses that we have lined up for this spring. And what we aim to do is offer a small number of the highest quality courses each semester, and each course will be doing something truly innovative. So there isn't a way to predict where edX is going to go or where it's going to become. The possibilities are really limitless, because when you go to, you just never know when you're at edX headquarters who's going to be there. The faculty from the MIT Media Lab and from their artificial intelligence lab are jumping in. Faculty from Harvard School of Education and our social sciences are jumping in. So everybody kind of wants in. So it's truly, truly difficult for us now to try to predict where it might go. So it's been a really short period of time. We really haven't had time to even study the data. But there's a few things that we know. We know pretty much that that edX has worked, because the students have embraced this new learning style. The student feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, and faculty have really been inspired by it. From a student perspective, just a few quick lessons. Students do learn at their own pace. They do their work whenever it works for them. They speed up. Most of them speed up videos, of course, unless English is a second language, then they might slow down. Many, many students reverse, replay. Communities are popping up incredibly rapidly, and they keep going even after the course has been completed. Students love immediate feedback. This has become a bit of an icon. The edX platform, after you've viewed a short video segment, you take a little quiz, you get that little quiz right, you get one of these awesome green check marks. And before we knew it, on the web, you can buy a green check mark t-shirt and coffee mugs. So students love the feedback, and they sort of wear their green check marks now with pride. No surprise here, students procrastinate, whether it's online or on campus. So what has it meant for faculty? Our faculty have learned it is really hard work. Teaching your course through edX is not just taking your course the way you've taught it on campus and mounting it online. Faculty have to completely rethink, reimagine what they've been teaching. They have to pull it apart, and they have to teach in completely different ways. It literally took a small village to support each of those two courses. There's a huge amount of support that's needed when you work with faculty to reinvent their course. However, the faculty who... It was way more than they bargained for when they said they wanted to do it. However, they have really liked it. They've really liked being liberated from grading. They've really liked, they've all sort of seized this moment to put into place improvements that they've been thinking about for a long time. And they've all found the feedback that they've gotten from students all over the world to be incredibly rewarding. So what I said at the beginning, one of our major goals is to conduct advanced teaching and learning through research. We have a School of Education at Harvard, and our dean of the Graduate School of Education explains that the Ed School is incredibly excited because research on teaching and learning, she says, has been inadequate, because until now, any type of significant data collection is very, very difficult and very expensive. So until now, we've not really had the ability to access granular data that just clicks and keystrokes can provide. The clicks and the keystrokes can really tell us how much time was spent on a task. It can show patterns. And it really will begin to reveal, because there's just so much of this data, as close as we can get to what's going on in the heads of students. And until now, we really haven't had such enormous sample sizes at a fraction of the cost historically. We also are going to be able to do integrated assessments to help understand the impact of different teaching styles with A-B studies and groups. And we're going to have the ability to survey students on far more complex questions about motivation and persistence. So at Harvard, faculty from Harvard and MIT have been meeting since the beginning of the summer to talk about what the research framework is, what areas of research should we tackle first. So there have been combinations of learning scientists and psychometricians and anthropologists. And I have to tell you, in these rooms, this room of MIT and Harvard faculty coming together, I don't think I've ever been in a faculty meeting where faculty have been happy, I should say, where there's been so much electricity and so much excitement about the possibilities. And of course, the research data is going to help us to continually improve the platform. So here are just, you know, some of the questions, but literally this faculty group has probably generated close to 100 different research questions they're eager to tackle. Courses that are under construction for the spring include humanities, social sciences, and I'm just talking about the ones from Harvard, humanities, social sciences, law, and public health. And there are some incredible blockbusters that are going to be coming out of MIT, as well as out of the University of California at Berkeley. Even though the number of courses is relatively small, because we're focusing on delivering the highest quality courses with innovations embedded in each one, this whole process in a remarkably short period of time at Harvard has catalyzed conversations about what we all do. It has been catalyzing conversations about technology in education across the entire university. The conversations and the excitement really does extend across all disciplines on our campus, and we really do believe that edX eventually will impact Harvard's physical space, how our days are structured, our academic calendar, interactions between our faculty and our students. Raphael Reif said, you saw him in the video. He was the provost when the video was done at the press. He's now the president of MIT. And Raphael recently said, you know, 5 years from now, edX will not have transformed either MIT or Harvard's campus, but 5 years from now, we will know what our campuses are going to look like because of technology. So I'm going to end with that. Thank you very much for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any easy questions you might have.
Questions?
Hello. This does work. David White from the University of Oxford. My unit delivers a lot of online distance learning, so obviously I'm very interested in this. We do a lot of stuff in the humanities and the social sciences, and obviously I know it's early days, but I just wondered if you had any thoughts about how you're going to tackle subjects where there often isn't a correct answer, and whether that's ever going to be scalable in the same way that the subjects you're dealing with at the moment are.
Next question.
Does that not count as an easy question?
I said easy questions. That's probably the hottest topic on our campus right now, and our faculty who teach creative writing are right now deeply engaged with some experiments and mapping out some of the things that they think we might be able to develop for them in the platform for them. So I really can't tell you specifically any of the strategies, but we're engaged in that right now.
Okay. If you do find out, can you let me know?
Oh, sure. Sure. Of course.
Hi, Sharon Pitt from George Mason University. You talked about the impact and perhaps the design and physical space of campus. Reading another article, and I think this was really, it more came from MIT, defining the role of who we are at institutions from faculty to who is a student to what is a credential. Can you speak to that a bit?
Well, those are huge questions, of course, and that's why, you know, those of us who have been in information technology for a long time, we're so used to all of the undelivered promises of how technology was going to change education, and we're still doing it exactly the same as we were before. But right now, in fact, this morning, the edX board convened, 5 a.m. our time, and the edX board is comprised of MIT's provost and Harvard's provost and the chancellors and deans. And these are the questions they're talking about. I have to say, these edX is surfacing exactly those questions that our leaders are thinking about really quite deeply. So, of course, we don't have answers to them, but the conversation is active right now.
Yes. Hi, I'm Amy Donovan, and I'm with Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in the Boston area, and we're in a consortium with your divinity school. And I have a question that's similar to the first question, related to the writing. Have you had any discussions at this point about courses that require a great deal of research, research along with the critical thinking and writing?
I'm looking at Katie. I'm not allowed to reveal the courses yet. Katie's bringing up a good point. I mentioned that it takes a village to support just one of these courses, and we're right now trying to figure out what a HarvardX online learning organization needs to look like at our campus. What are the services that are going to come out of edX? What services need to provide at HarvardX? And so we are marshaling all types of support resources from our campus, like our librarians who are joining on board the team, and they're going to be providing research assistance for our faculty, supporting research that's required in the courses, as well as taking on the role around IP copyright clearance. Right. So the answer is yes. You know, stay tuned, check out the courses in the spring, and I think you'll see some examples of not only the more narrative-based courses, but also courses that rely on student research.
Thank you.
How about over here?
Hi, Dan Jacobson from UW-Madison. I don't have a softball for you, I'm afraid. So I'm really excited to hear the leadership of both campuses say that this is not going to be a secondary experience to Harvard or to MIT. And, you know, just perhaps leaders continuously saying that will create that kind of scenario. But then is the vision that the credentials that one gets out of becoming an edX graduate at some point is equal to that of MIT or Harvard?
Well, what answer would you give? Because, I think these, what's happening now, each of the schools around Harvard is a large place. I'll try to answer this on behalf of Harvard as opposed to both institutions. Harvard has a number of professional schools. We've gone around and we've talked to every dean and to all the professional schools. And what's really happening are four or five different future models for online learning that can also take advantage of this edX platform. It could very well be in the future that some of those offer credits. We don't have any plans to do that in the near future. It could be that Harvard offers, some of our professional schools are interested in offering prerequisite courses, you know, courses that students really need to take before they come to class so that when they come to Harvard's campus, they're all well prepared. So there are, I'm thinking, I think a half a dozen potential models that have been brainstormed, which down the road can take advantage of this platform. How, you know, how this spectrum of offerings from Harvard and MIT evolves, we don't yet know. We already have a division of continuing ed. We actually already offer quite a few online courses for credits and for degrees. So one of the great challenges over the next couple of years will be to figure out how all of these different offerings that go from just free open content to online learning to bundled programs to a full residential program, how that spectrum of offerings makes sense and are rationalized.
Good afternoon. My name is Jan Poston-Day. I'm with Pearson. I had a question about how you'll measure the quality of your online courses. It's a challenge. It's been a challenge for a long time with online courses and programs such as Quality Matters and Blackboard's Exemplary Course Program are trying to do that. What frameworks or quantitative methods will you use?
Well, that's a terrific question. At Harvard, we have a faculty committee that's formed for HarvardX on course selection and criteria. This faculty committee has worked on defining a set of criteria, which Harvard believes is about quality. And it's largely about outcomes and impact. So it, again, it's only been 6 months. We've only done pilot courses. But that's what the faculty, I mentioned earlier that this is going to, has to be faculty driven. So there's a faculty committee that's working on that. Each campus defines, each campus selects the courses to go on the edX platform. And each campus is the arbiter of their definition of quality.
Thank you.
Harry Samuels, Northwestern University. I'm wondering, what is the business model? Do you expect to generate any revenue and ongoing? What's the sustainability economically?
The plan that we have is for this first year, we're in startup mode. Our goals for startup mode is to experiment and try courses, to develop our governance model, to develop our faculty support model, to develop the organization needed to support for edX, as well as the organizations that are needed for the campuses. After this first startup year, the plan is for 3 years of experimentation. And one aspect of experimentation is to experiment with different sustainability models. So we will, and we do have a goal for not being completely sustainable in just 3 years, but for experimenting with different ways to generate some revenue to cover the costs. And there's a list of about 15 different models. I think we're going to experiment probably next year with two or three of them. Over here.
Yeah, David Norman from Bentley University. My question was, you mentioned, Anne, that you have a kind of development group and working kind of on an open source kind of development. How important is the is that part of edX? Are you also trying to develop an education platform as well as just a delivery, content delivery?
I didn't catch one word you said.
How important is the
Okay.
is the development of this edX as a platform for learning?
Oh, it's incredibly important. It's not yet an open community. That's one of our goals for the later half of this year and into next year. But certainly at Harvard, and I know my friend Marilyn from MIT is here, Marilyn and I are working with the edX development team so that we can figure out how we can leverage and take advantage of the software, the edX platform for our on-campus platform. And in fact, some of the folks from my organization who work on our current learning management platform at Harvard are being embedded with the edX staff. So we're really, really hoping that we're going to be developing this open source platform together, and we'll be developing the specialized technologies that will be needed for the on-campus system, but hopefully sharing a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Yes?
Well, I think, yeah.
Okay. Hi, I'm Michael Feldstein. I have a question about the open community that you were talking about developing, but not related to software. To David's earlier question about the subjects that can't be machine graded, there are promising technologies out there and approaches that are being developed, from calibrated peer review to, you know, machine learning around textual analysis. But some of the most interesting work on that is not at the moment happen to be coming out of Harvard and MIT. So it's places like Carnegie Mellon and Rice and others. So my question is, do you have a plan to build a learning research community that's broader than the participants in the edX program?
Yes. You'll be hearing soon an announcement about some new partners, but those will be partners who share our vision, our values, who are making some significant contributions either in software or other ways, and whose courses we'll be hosting on our platform. But that's not the only way that we expect to be inclusive and to be working with other universities. We also expect to be developing a very broad, very open community around the platform so that anyone can use the software on their campuses or develop their own version of an edX. We also tend to be very inclusive and work very broadly with other universities around the research. So you can expect a number of significant conferences or symposiums to be sponsored and held by MIT and Harvard, and including many universities from around the world. Over here.
I'll try that again. This is a question from the online audience, and it sort of feeds into your previous answer. The question is, would you agree that edX-like projects require a lot of funding that cannot be attempted by smaller institutions?
I think it is absolutely fair to say that it, I don't know if it takes a lot of funding. I mean, it takes making it a serious priority and potentially redirecting resources to make it happen. And I do think we are eventually going to reach some economies of scale in some aspects of what we deliver with edX. But it is fundamentally a very labor-intensive process for faculty. So it requires, in an ideal situation, support for the faculty to rethink their teaching. You know, our aim is to make the technology component very low cost, but rethinking and reinventing the way you teach, I think, will always be somewhat of a heavy lift. But I don't think that means small colleges can't do it. I think there are going to be very innovative ways that smaller schools will participate.
Hi, thank you. I'm Dan Gilbert from the University of Nebraska at Omaha. And just a thought that occurred to me while you're explaining is how, if there are a billion people in the world that are being served on this platform, and that this is the vision of whether or not we're all having the same experience. And I don't know if I have a good enough answer or an alternative, but it strikes me that there is value in diversity. There is value in having different people take even the same subject, but taking it at different institutions or having different experiences even, and then comparing their notes and synthesizing. And so I'm just wondering if that kind of risk or fear has been discussed, or what are some of the other fears when you're having this meeting? You know, anyone seen Cloud Atlas? Are we heading towards unanimity? And so whether or not this is a tool for going down there, if that's not a risk.
Huh, that's an interesting question. You know, you can see, I think even on our platform, we have multiple computer science classes. So we're not trying to create singular unanimity in all of the disciplines. You know, we're trying to create incredibly high quality that others can use and can benefit from. If you could just say a few more words about what the fear...
I guess the fear is I know in different stops of my professional career, I've gained a lot trading and exchanging experiences with people who had similar training as I did, but did it in a different context. And so I'm wondering if we're scaling the same context over and over again so that everyone who takes the 150,000 people that took the CS50 course, if that scales to the kind of level that that were possible. I mean, it's fantastic that it's high quality, it's taught by the world's experts, but I don't wonder if there's a trade-off that we're all having the same experience. And that's, it just occurred to me that we might all be doing the same thing, and if we're not, there's value in comparing
that's a very deep question. When I was working at MIT, I was executive director of MIT's Open Courseware program. And we at MIT at the time made a commitment that we were going to share all of MIT's courses openly because the firm belief is that innovation and discovery happen best when knowledge is offered openly and freely. And so I guess philosophically I would answer your question by saying, I think that edX and others, by making these courses available, are going to catalyze and spark more creativity and more innovation instead of a one-size-fits-all common approach.
I hope so.
I do too. We'll see. Any other questions? Great. Thank you all very much.